This Strategy and Business podcast was produced in conjunction with Knowledge at Wharton. Money isn't the key to successful innovation. In fact, many companies spend far less than their competitors on R&D to achieve far better performance. To learn why that's the case, Strategy and Business and Knowledge at Wharton spoke with Kevin Dayhoff, a partner at Booz & Company, and Carl Ulrich, Wharton Professor of Operations and Information Management. In this final part of a three-part series, Dayhoff and Ulrich talk about innovation in the auto industry, what constitutes it, why some manufacturers like Toyota are more innovative than others, and the role that customers play in innovative product development.
Carl, the automotive industry seems to be especially innovative. It's constantly rolling out new product features and new processes. Why do you think this is?
Well, first, let me disagree with the premise. I would not really characterize the automotive industry as highly innovative. Or let me qualify that by saying the automotive industry pours tremendous resources into product improvement, product innovation, but the vast majority of that innovation is done within a very static product architecture. So we see improvements in tire technology, but it's fundamentally a pneumatic rubber device on a steel or aluminum rim. We see improvements in GPS navigation systems, but they're still plugged into the same basic approach to how we've moved people around with automobiles really since the beginning of the 20th century. So I think that I honestly do not see a tremendous amount of innovation in the fundamental approach to how we move people around with automobiles. And yet I think we are likely to see some dramatic changes. The biggest changes that are on the horizon here are, first of all, changes in energy sources. And there are a lot of bets being placed as to whether the energy sources will be biofuels, whether they'll be hydrogen, which personally I highly doubt, or whether they might in fact be, most of the energy for automotive transport might be come from the electricity grid through plug-in hybrids. So that's one disruption that is likely to play out to lead to innovation that the likes of which we haven't seen for 100 years. Before I interject all of my opinions on autos, I'll turn it over to Kevin. But I guess I would question the premise that the industry has been innovative in the way that I think the public is used to thinking about radical innovation or dramatic innovation.
Yeah, I think in the context of sort of discontinuous innovation, I agree. There's two that come to mind. One you mentioned, I think there is the potential for some interesting dynamics around alternative powertrains and how that's all going to sort out. There are, as Carl mentioned, there's a number of different points of view and different bets being placed, and so I think we're going to see that play out, and I think that's going to be an innovation that has a dramatic effect on how we think about automobiles in the future. The second area that I think will potentially also have a discontinuous effect is around safety, around all the active and passive safety and some of the technology that ultimately gets to be applied, particularly in some of the near premium and premium segments. I think that people are going to continue to demand safety in their vehicles, and that's going to be something that technology discontinuities will drive the ability to satisfy those needs in some pretty interesting ways in the future.
The wild card on automotive, I think, is what we think will happen to fuel prices in the future. And second, whether in the United States, at least, there will be a more aggressive regulatory environment. For my taste, I'd rather see the information communicated to the manufacturers through price signals, through higher costs of gasoline. But I think it's likely that in the next administration, we'll see some regulation around CAFE, corporate average fuel economy, which will also put some serious pressure on the automotive industry to innovate.
Yeah, I think how those regulations get sort of divided up among, sort of land-based power generation versus the automotive industry versus the aviation industry, I think that those how those regulatory, that regulatory balance plays out is actually going to drive innovation across all three of those areas and probably others as well.
Kevin, you mentioned innovation taking place in powertrains and in safety as two key areas. Which companies specifically seem to be pushing the envelope in those areas?
Well, the one that the automotive company that I've kind of been interested in and studied over the last couple of years has been Toyota. And I found that, particularly over the last decade, to be quite interesting in the context of what they've been able to accomplish in terms of driving growth, in terms of taking market share, and in terms of the market capitalization that that's translated into in terms of, I think their market capitalization right now is in excess of the next four or five competitors combined. So, I mean, they've really been on a roll. And, you know, you hear a lot about Toyota's production system and the efficiencies that they get from the production system. But what I've found is that in reality, a lot of that is really enabled by the product creation process, by the product development system that they've put in place. And that's what really has been able to drive a lot of the performance that Toyota's realized over the last couple of years.
You know, I totally agree that Toyota is an amazing company. You basically have to recast the market capitalization of the industry with and without Toyota because it's so much of an outlier in terms of its market value. I mean, we saw yesterday GM racked up a $35 billion loss for 2007. So Toyota is truly outstanding. But it's also interesting to look at the other extreme. I think there are going to be some very interesting activities by startups and new entrants. And so let me just give you two examples. A venture-backed startup out of Silicon Valley called Tesla Motors has a kind of a show car that they're beginning to produce, but then has plans for a mainstream sedan that is very exciting. It's going to be an electric vehicle that could be very disruptive. And the other thing to look at that I think it'll be our listeners will be interested in looking at is the Automotive X Prize, which is a multi-million dollar prize that's being offered for any innovator that can both deliver a vehicle that has certain environmental and performance standards, but also that can be produced in volume at reasonable cost. And so it's going to be a fascinating competition that's going to play out over the next 2 years. And my prediction is there will be hundreds of entrants into that competition, and then we'll see some fascinating innovation at kind of the grassroots level of the industry.
The only thing I would add to that is also the future growth in emerging markets in China and India, and I mean you're seeing Tata Motors and some of those how companies respond to the requirements of future automobiles.
Well, one of the things we're seeing from Tata in particular is innovation at the bottom of the pyramid, if you will, the stripping a car to its very basics. Mm-hmm. What other sorts of that's almost cost in manufacturing innovation. What other sorts of innovation do you expect?
I think it'll largely be around that, around the ability to make the appropriate trade-offs and understanding what are the basic requirements for those markets and other markets and how to make the appropriate trade-offs in terms of providing something that is really tailored to the requirements of those emerging markets, recognizing that, for GM, Ford, and Chrysler, it's a completely different mindset as to how they potentially would need to respond to those.
And the same markets, in fact.
That's right.
I mean, I think that's the Tata vehicle is going to be fascinating to watch because I think there will be Americans who will say, why can't I have a $2,000 car? Mm-hmm. And it will force us to really confront what is the minimal requirement on personal transportation. When the vehicle starts to approach the price of a nice mountain bike, you start to ask, maybe I don't need to have a 6,000-pound vehicle with a global positioning system in it to get to the grocery store. And so I think the innovations in the developing markets will actually have some repercussions in the Western and mainstream markets.
Back to Toyota for a moment. Kevin, you started to talk about what sounded like the strategic advantage that Toyota had developed for itself with its innovation processes. Can you talk about that a bit more?
My belief is that that strategic and competitive advantage for Toyota has come through what I call an economically advantaged product creation system. And that is that when you look at Toyota relative to, in particular, the U.S. OEMs, they can develop new products faster and more efficiently than their competitors. The resultant products that they develop have inherent cost advantages. They have much higher quality, reliability, durability. As a result of that, they command price premiums in the market. And so the fact that Toyota has built over many years this advantaged product creation system, they look at investments in new segments, investments in new products differently than a company that has a different set of economics associated with their new product development process. And so what that's enabled them to do is drive a lot of the growth that I talked about earlier by being able to enter new segments in cases where other companies may look at that segment and say, hey, we can't make that investment work. And then as a result of that, and this is where you sort of come full cycle, is that those superior economics, those superior results have enabled them to make investments in some of these new innovative technologies that we talked about around alternative, you know, powertrains in their case, you know, all the hybrid vehicles and what they've done in that case, as well as the other one I mentioned, which is in some of the safety and some of the other technological innovations that will, you know, they'll ultimately be able to put in future vehicles as well.
It'd be interesting to see how and if Toyota responds to Tata.
I think that's a challenge for Toyota in terms of how they take that successful product development model that I mentioned and globalize it, because it's right now a very successful model. It's largely a centralized model that works out of Tokyo, and I believe that one of their challenges going forward is how do we replicate that model around the world.
So, Carl, going back to your point about American consumers reacting to the Nano, what role do users or customers play in automotive innovation, and is the role growing?
Well, it's interesting because users often can play many different roles. In some industries, they can be innovators themselves, and so that's typical of industries in which there's a high level of technical skill applied by the user. So you'll look, for example, in surgical instruments, you'll see a lot of orthopedic surgeons, for example, who are also garage tinkers and will develop surgical instruments that then get developed in practice. You don't see so much of that in the auto industry. It's not a game that anymore that many of the garage mechanics play effectively. And so I think the principal role of users and customers is going to be as adopters. I mean, as people react to innovation rather than as people who lead the innovation. There are some exceptions. Some firms have found certain segments that do a lot of customization and adaptation of their vehicles. The whole Toyota Scion line is one that's really played to that market segment. But by and large, I think in the auto industry, we're a fairly passive set of users.
Are there other industries where users or customers do play a more critical role?
Certainly in any technical products, professional software, surgical instruments, other medical devices, scientific instruments, you see the boundary between user and innovator is quite blurry. And so you'll see users doing innovation and then manufacturers adopting those innovation, and you'll see this fairly fluid boundary between users and innovators.
Any thoughts on the changes in innovation processes, how they might transform over the next few years as innovation becomes more global, as a response to different new markets?
I guess only the one that I mentioned earlier around the value of a global network and cracking the code in terms of how we will operate in the context of those global networks. And then the role of technology in terms of opening up that front end of the innovation pipeline in terms of access to new ideas and the transferability of information across those networks. And I think that's an area, as I said earlier, where the companies that figure out how to make that all work, I think will enjoy some real advantage in doing so.
I have a hope for how innovation processes might change, and it's really more in how they might be applied. An observation I'd make is that some industries are pretty good at explicitly managing their pipelines and their funnels and their processes. They think about how many opportunities they have. They think about how many they're processing, how they evaluate them, how they select them. But there are quite a few industries that are at a much different level of knowledge. So if you look, for example, at the entertainment industry, it's an industry that uses almost no analytical tools to manage its innovation process. And yet motion pictures, for example, look for all the world to me like pharmaceuticals. If you look at the basic economics of the funnel, it's extremely similar. And take another example would be in service industries, where we've done very little to codify the innovation process within service industries. And so my hope is that some of the really great tools that have been developed in the more technical product-based industries will be applied in perhaps the softer or more service-oriented industries.
Thank you for listening to our series on innovation. For more insights about management, innovation, public policy, strategy, and more, visit Strategy and Business at strategy-business.com. For more business research and analysis from Knowledge at Wharton, visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.